Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 91.7 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on dozens of radio stations in different US and European cities. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1168, I will have several segments. I will share with you the remarks of Noor Ariqat, a professor of Africana Studies and the Program of Criminal Justice at Rutgers University, delivered at the United Nations commemorating the 77th anniversary of the start of the ongoing Palestinian Nakba. I will air the remarks of Congressman Al Green opposing ethnic cleansing in Gaza. I will also air the Sarajevo Declaration, Gaza Tribunal's Call for Justice, and the remarks of Professor Nimer Soltani, delivered at the Gaza Tribunal on Genocide and the Palestinian Nakba. But before I do that, I'd like to ask for your support and contributions to KPFT, this unique commercial-free Houston's community station, because KPFT is currently in fund drive, and that is a great opportunity to upgrade your listenership to listener sponsor and become a member of the KPFT family. KPFT is mainly financed by listeners like you, and it does not rely on the corporate world to operate. So please give us a call right now at 713-526-5738 and make that tax-deductible contribution to support your community radio station. That's 713-526-5738. You can also make a pledge online at kpft.org. Join us in keeping the airwaves alive. Your support during this fund drive ensures that KPFT remains a vibrant hub of local voices and diverse perspectives, just like this program, Arab Voices, that has been on KPFT for over 22 years. Yes, we started in April 2002, coming to you weekly with over 1,000 expert guests appearing on this program from across the world. So it's crucial to continue your support to your community radio station, KPFT 90.1 FM. Every dollar you contribute goes directly towards sustaining independent journalism, empowering grassroots initiatives, and fostering a sense of belonging in our community. Together, we can make a difference through the power of community radio. 713-526-5738 is the number to call right now and support your community radio station. And again, you can do it online safely and securely at kpft.org. Arab Voices, if you're not familiar with it, is an award-winning independent radio talk show that aims at bringing the truth, facts, and realities to the wide and diverse range of listeners. It debunks many of the stereotypes, myths, and false information disseminated by certain media outlets, some politicians, and others. So if you appreciate what this station has been doing, I ask you to support it and keep Arab Voices and other programs on the air. Please make that call and make a pledge of any amount, whether it's $60 or $360. Call 713-526-5738 or make a pledge online at kpft.org. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. The ongoing Israeli genocide of Palestinians continues in the occupied and destroyed Gaza Strip, while at the same time Israel is escalating its attacks on the Palestinians throughout the occupied West Bank and stealing more Palestinian land to build Israeli colonies on them. Just a few days ago, Israel announced it will build 22 more new Israeli colonies in the occupied West Bank on stolen Palestinian land. Of course, Israel continues to enjoy full impunity for all its war crimes throughout the occupied Palestinian territories, funded and supported by several Western countries, including the United States. As the catastrophe continues to get worse by the second in the occupied Gaza Strip, the United Nations Security Council failed to move forward a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, the release of all hostages from Gaza, and the delivery of aid to the Gaza Strip. All countries in the Security Council voted for this draft resolution, but of course, and as expected, the United States vetoed the resolution. So the U.S. veto at the United Nations Security Council was a U.S. vote for the continuation of genocide, war crimes, slaughter, ethnic cleansing, starvation, demolition, bombing, destruction, and murder of all Palestinians, including children and babies in Gaza. And make no mistake about it, it started over 77 years ago, and not on October 7th, 2023. By the way, the U.S. has used its veto power dozens of times, I believe 83 times, when it came to Palestine. And yes, most of them were prior to October 7th, 2023. Speaking of the United Nations, Dr. Noura Riqat, a professor of Africana Studies and the Program of Criminal Justice at Rutgers University, an author and co-founding editor of Jadaliyah, addressed the United Nations on May 15, 2025, commemorating the 77th anniversary of the start of the ongoing Palestinian Nakba, in which she highlighted the shortcomings of international law in stopping Israel's ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Let's take a listen.
Today is day 585 of genocide, and every day we witness unprecedented atrocities. 2 days ago, we saw a baby in a red onesie, not yet 1 year old, have both of her tiny legs amputated. We witnessed a missile rip through a hospital to kill a renowned journalist receiving treatment and learned of the assassination of a 12-year-old boy who witnessed the massacre of 15 paramedics and their burial in a mass grave. Israel has destroyed 92% of Gaza's residential buildings, incapacitated its 36 hospitals, and prevented the entry of food and basic goods. In doing so, it is not only killing Palestinians now, but threatening the possibility of a Palestinian future. A campaign that seeks to obliterate the future of a people is a genocide. Yet, despite these chilling statistics and an ICJ decision indicating its plausibility, there remains controversy as to this basic fact. Why? The most pervasive talking point is that Israel is not targeting Palestinians as a people, but only targeting Hamas. Putting aside significant issues in law and fact that militate against this point, let me just share with you some statistics. What we know so far is that 2% of Palestinians in Gaza have been killed, including over 20,000 children buried and disappeared. The names of those under the age of one fill the first 14 pages of a 649-page document. So far, 1,200 entire families have been erased forever from the civil registry. 3 months into the war, the UN humanitarian chief described Gaza as uninhabitable. And since then, the situation has only gotten worse. This certainly exceeds Hamas militants. According to Israel, these horrifying numbers are irrelevant because they are the result, they say, of deliberate human shielding by Hamas. Again, putting aside significant issues of law and fact, let me just share with you the tactics of the army itself. It has sniped children twice above the waist. It has used quadcopters to spray and kill children who are sprawled and injured on the floor. It has destroyed the largest in vitro fertility clinic, including 4,000 embryos. It has executed patients with their hands zip-tied and thrown into mass graves. They have sexually assaulted detainees captured without charge or trial, bombed safe routes where Palestinians were ordered to flee, bombed safe zones where Palestinians were ordered to shelter, tortured medical doctors to death, destroyed more than half of Gaza's desalination plants, undermining access to clean water, leveled all four major universities, attacked factories, libraries, bakeries, heritage sites, 247 mosques, 3 churches, and bulldozed 16 cemeteries. As put by Professor Shirin Sayali, any honest observer of this war understands that the target of Israeli force and U.S.-supplied weapons is the Palestinian civilian. Hamas is the collateral damage. The purpose of this campaign is the destruction of the Palestinian people for the sake of achieving long-term Israeli security, what I term Nakba peace, a violent oxymoron that predicates Jewish-Israeli safety on the elimination of Palestinians. In pursuit of its territorial ambitions to achieve unchecked Zionist settler sovereignty, Israel has removed Palestinians for 77 years and counting. It has imposed a permanent military occupation on the West Bank and Gaza for 58 years and counting. And it has besieged 2.3 million Palestinians who are now possibly only 2 million because of this past 19 months, besieged them for 17 years and counting. What we have been witnessing for the past 585 days is the cruelest and most violent episode of the ongoing Nakba. This did not start on October 7th, nor was it a response to October 7th that provided a useful cover in order to accelerate this massive removal. On October 12, 2023, Agricultural Minister Avi Dichter told us plainly, this is Nakba 2023, a campaign that is evidenced across Palestinian geographies, including in the northern West Bank, where some 40,000 Palestinians have been removed just this year. The Trump administration has adopted this goal in its current bid to build a Gaza Riviera to remove Palestinians to the Sudan, Somalia, or Syria. And most recently, on May 4th, 2025, the Israeli cabinet unanimously voted to reoccupy all of Gaza and ethnically cleanse its remaining inhabitants. This is why the return of more than 300,000 Palestinians to their homes in North Gaza in early 2025 was so incredible. It was the first time in nearly 8 decades of ongoing Nakba that we witnessed the return of Palestinians en masse, a return that embodies the national aspirations of the Palestinian people. As chronicled by Ahmed Aburtima, who marched home, on that day, I walked as I had never walked before, about 15 kilometers nonstop. I entered Gaza City, a dream long cherished during the days of war, now realized. Despite unprecedented cruelty, Palestinians refused to surrender and marched home by foot. This is precisely why Palestinians are racialized as a security threat, because we refuse to disappear. The Nakba is ongoing, and so is Palestinian resistance to our elimination. There is sufficient law to end the genocide, to lift the blockade, to end the occupation, and to realize Palestinian self-determination. Had international law ever been enough, however, Palestinian refugees would be growing their families and their gardens on their original lands rather than searching for the remains of flesh of their babies beneath the rubble. Remarkably, the time of genocide has also been a moment of significant judicial strides furthering Palestinian liberation. In January 2024, the International Court of Justice determined that Israel's campaign was plausible genocide. In May 2024, it issued another provisional measure ordering the withdrawal from Rafah. That same month, the International Criminal Court finally issued arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant. In July 2024, the ICJ issued an advisory opinion determining that Israel's presence in the West Bank and Gaza is unlawful, ordering it to withdraw its settlers and military from the territory and to provide reparations for the Palestinian people. Last month, the ICJ heard an argument on the legality of banning UNRWA, the UN refugee agency responsible for humanitarian relief, and now banned amid a starvation campaign that has killed 57 children in 2 months. This is not a legal controversy. It is a political one. The United States, among other states, has wrung its hands behind judicial rulings, but this is selective deference to the court. In its last days of office, the Biden administration recognized there's a genocide of the Masalit ethnic tribe in Darfur by the Rapid Support Forces. When asked whether they can use the same standards to make that decision to adjudicate Israel's campaign in Gaza, the U.S. Ambassador at Large for Global Criminal Justice said, quote, it will ultimately be for the ICJ judges to decide, with zero irony, that they did not have to submit their evidence on the Sudan before the ICJ. This is not a legal controversy. This is a political one. The selective deference to the ICJ on the question of genocide of Palestinians is an attempt to deflect responsibility. And the ongoing counter-revolution against activists globally is an attempt to revise a history of the present. Since 2020, an emerging consensus among legacy human rights organizations and the World Court have defined Israel as an apartheid regime. Rather than boycott, divest from, and sanction apartheid Israel, the global community has attempted to normalize it. 5 years later, we see the danger of allowing that exception. Apartheid and genocide are on the same continuum. The three of the specific acts conducted to maintain apartheid are identical to the acts committed to commit genocide. In the former, for apartheid, they are done for the purpose of domination. In the latter, they are done with the intent to destroy. Genocide is the logical outcome of any project to conquer and settle the land upon which another people live, unless it is checked. Many of you here, many of you, have either survived colonialism or are the ancestors of those who have survived colonialism. And you are painfully aware of its legacies. That's why in 1974, this body firmly resolved that Palestinians are a juridical people. Palestinians exist and deserve to exist. By relegating Palestine to a bilateral political issue beyond the reach of international norms, you have steadily normalized occupation. By failing to apply sanctions and engage in boycott, many of you have normalized apartheid. And now, by failing to act, you are at risk of normalizing genocide. But if you normalize genocide, you will have nothing left. If it is permissible to deny a people exist, to cage them, to subject them to systematic warfare, then to use AI technology to bomb them at unprecedented rates in their homes, to burn them alive in tents, to experiment on them with suicide drones, to deny them medical care, to allow premature babies to rot in NICU units, and mamas be denied anesthetic to have C-sections, to starve them while their food decays in miles of aid trucks, all without consequence, and worse, while insisting that their lives are secondary, if not altogether insignificant, relative to Zionist settler sovereignty, then I promise you that no one is safe. As put by Colombian President Gustavo Petro, Gaza is a rehearsal for the rest of the world. Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich recently said that the victory in the war would mean the full destruction of Gaza and the displacement of its residents. He has also boasted that Israelis, quote, are finally going to conquer the Gaza Strip. We are no longer afraid of the word occupation. Smotrich's audacity is our failure. You must make it impossible for Smotrich and anyone else to boast of conquest through genocide in the 21st century. Make those who speak it have to say it in hushed whispers, in closed rooms, rather than boast about that conquest. But let us speak honestly. Most of you fear U.S. retribution. The genocide in Gaza is one of the major atrocities of our time, and most people in the world are against it. Our inability to stop it reflects an international system where the equality of nation states remains an aspirational principle. It might be good for us to remember, the United States is an empire, but the United States is not the world. In this precise moment, U.S. lawmakers welcomed the international war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu into the White House. U.S. lawmakers and universities welcomed Minister of National Security Itamar Ben-Gvir, who was disqualified from military service because of his affiliation with the Kahan movement, declared a terrorist organization by the U.S. and Israel. Can you imagine being so extreme that you cannot serve in the Israeli army? The same army that sprays 5.5-year-old girls with 335 bullets and executes 15 paramedics and buries them along with their ambulances in a mass grave? The Israeli army wouldn't have Ben-Gvir, but U.S. lawmakers and several U.S. universities embraced him, just as they colluded to kidnap, disappear, and deport students. Do not look west for moral or political leadership. The United States has long absconded on that position. Do not let the United States and Israel upend the global system. In its defense of Israel, the United States threatens the entire legal structure established since the Second World War. In just 19 months, the U.S. has vetoed 5 ceasefire resolutions to end this genocide, despite the extraordinary invocation of Article 99 by the U.N. Secretary General and 2 invocations of Uniting for Peace resolutions. Both the Biden and Trump administration have denigrated the ICJ. U.S. National Security Spokesman John Kirby described the ICJ case on genocide on the Genocide Convention as, quote, meritless, counterproductive, and completely without any basis in fact whatsoever. Our world court is being denigrated. The primary judicial organ of this body is being denigrated by those who claim global leadership. The U.S. is not even a signatory to the Rome Statute, which established the International Criminal Court, but the Trump administration has passed an executive order to place sanctions on the prosecutor and anyone who cooperates with the court. In October 2024, 107 members of Congress threatened to cease financial support to the UN if it unseated Israel, literally threatening its budget for doing your job. What is the purpose of the UN if it cannot stop a genocide and prevent the calculated starvation of 2 million people? The international community has failed many times before and at great cost. One of the most significant times was in 1936, when the League of Nations allowed Mussolini's fascist Italy to invade Ethiopia, an independent member state of the League. Then, the League imposed cosmetic sanctions rather than an oil embargo to stop the war. It tolerated Italy's use of chemical weapons and described Ethiopia's people's war as human shielding. The consequence of racist imperialism was ultimately the dissolution of the League of Nations. The UN was born of this failure. It was born of the commitment to not let atrocities of genocide, from Namibia to the Armenian genocide to the Holocaust, happen again. It is that commitment that is at stake today. If you do not stand up and speak out, this very system will be a casualty of the U.S.-Israel genocidal war on Palestine and the Palestinian people. Today, we do not need the United Nations to be a powerful symbol of international cooperation. We need your collective action to simply be powerful. In this moment, we have many choices. We can acknowledge Israel's campaign as genocide and impose an arms embargo, block the ports, sever diplomatic ties, sever all civilian and military trade, impose cultural and academic boycotts, and unseat Israel for its obstinate transgressions. If genocide is too much, you can confront this atrocity as a war, specifically a colonial war against a racist regime and alien occupation, regulated with the additional protocols and customary laws of war that recognize the captives as POWs, ensure them humane treatment, recognize Palestinian militants as combatants, permit third-party intervention. We can use the law to protect hospitals and schools and shelters, to protect the journalists and doctors and aid workers, to forcibly open the humanitarian corridors and abide by the ICC arrest warrants to arrest Netanyahu and Gallant upon arrival. If war is too much, You can confront this atrocity as a humanitarian tragedy. And you can send in a peacekeeping mission to protect Palestinians who have been denied their right to self-defense for nearly 8 decades. And if humanitarian tragedy is too much, you can find a way to have mercy on the Palestinian children, the ones who have been pulled from the rubble with two limbs and no family, and find themselves in a cage without food or water. Do not sit in the seat of power and do nothing. The United States is an empire, but the United States is not the world. You are the world. Each and every one of you has the capacity to halt this charade, to fulfill the minimal mandate of protecting a people's right to exist. Individually, you are each someone's ancestor, and you will be an ancestor to someone. Our time on this earth is ephemeral, and I implore you to give it meaning. As the Palestinian poet Mahmoud Darwish reminds us, we are not the most chosen people in the world, but no one is more chosen than us. You cannot abandon Palestine without betraying your legacy, your progeny, and yourself. May we transform this world into a place worthy of our children. May you be protected. May you be strong. May we be victorious. Free Palestine, and may Palestine free us all. Thank you.
That was Dr. Noura Arikat, Professor of Africana Studies and the Program of Criminal Justice at Rutgers University, an author and co-founding editor of Jadalia, addressing the United Nations on May 15, 2025, commemorating the 77th anniversary of the start of the ongoing Palestinian Nakba. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. I'd like to remind you that KPFT Houston's community station is currently in fund drive, and because KPFT relies on your support to operate, I am asking you to please call us right now and make a tax-deductible contribution. During this membership drive, please make a gift in support of the wide variety of shows that matters more than ever on KPFT. Please give online at kpft.org or call 713-526-5738. Members are the single most important source of funding for KPFT 90.1 FM. Why don't you call right now to make your membership investment and become a part of that important source? 713-526-5738, or you can give online at kpft.org. And if you make your membership a sustaining one, you'll be supporting the station for years to come. 713-526-5738 or kpft.org. This program, Arab Voices, has been on KPFT for over 22 years, coming to you every week, covering various topics with over 1,000 expert guests appearing on this program from around the globe. I interview guests on the show, and I also attend events and lectures, record them, and air them. Several radio stations syndicate Arab Voices in different cities in the U.S. and even a couple of cities in Europe. So if you appreciate what this station has been doing, we ask you to support it and keep Arab Voices and other programs on the air. Please make that call and make a pledge of any amount, whether it's $60 or $360. Call 713-526-5738 or make a pledge online at kpft.org. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. Congressman Al Green, who have spoken many times opposing ethnic cleansing in Gaza, spoke on the House floor on May 14, 2025 on that particular topic. Let's take a listen.
Mr. Speaker, and still I rise, unbought, unbossed, and unafraid. I rise driven by conscience to embrace the moral imperative to speak truth not only to power, but to also speak truth about power. And I rise today to acknowledge, driven by conscience, what the world is witnessing as we see the collective punishment being imposed upon Palestinians in Gaza. I rise to say that this level of punishment is something that is intolerable and has to be addressed. I rise to say that not only is there collective punishment, there is ethnic cleansing taking place in Gaza. I rise to say that at some point, we in this Congress have to take a stand against the injustice being perpetrated against innocent Palestinian men, women, and especially children. This level of injustice is something that this country has always stood against, but we find ourselves today standing with Mr. Netanyahu and the government that is bringing shame to the country of Israel. Israel should never do what it despises. I believe that the country of Israel would despise this level of punishment, this level of injustice being perpetrated upon another country. Yet we find today that Mr. Netanyahu, under his leadership, Israel is gaining a reputation as a pariah country. Mr. Speaker, to add insult to this grave injury, the United States of America is aiding and abetting by and through President Donald John Trump, aiding and abetting by simply having him conclude that somehow Gaza should become a resort of a sort, and that the Palestinians would be moved to some other place. That is a form of nouveau ethnic cleansing. I do not support it. And I want the world to know that if in this bill, this big, beautiful bill that the president would have us sign off on, that I'm already antithetical to, but if there is money in that bill to support the continued ethnic cleansing, the continued inhumanity that's taking place against the Palestinians, I cannot support that. I will not vote to send more money to see innocent men, women, and especially children slaughtered the way it is taking place right before our very eyes. And the unfortunate thing is, there are too many among us who are afraid to speak up. Well, I refuse to be among those who, at this time of challenge and controversy, who will sit and cower. I'm going to take a stand, not because it benefits me personally, but because conscience says we cannot allow these injustices to go unpunished. Driven by conscience to say that I won't be supporting sending any additional dollars to Israel, having already sent and voted for more than $50 billion. Nobody can accuse me of not being a supporter of Israel. I've supported it. But I can't support the Netanyahu administration and what it's doing to the country of Israel. And I can't support what's happening in my country as our president would embrace this ethnic cleansing. This is the hour of decision. This is a time for every person of goodwill to make a decision. I stand for peace in Palestine and a two-state solution. There are those who say that there is no plan for the interregnum, what we call the day after. Mr. Netanyahu does have a plan. It is to take all of Palestine. It is to take all of Gaza. It is to take the West Bank. He has a plan. Don't assume that because he's going in without our permission that he doesn't have a plan. He does. My plan is to vote against any additional funds to the State of Israel.
That was Congressman Al Green. During the previous episode of Arab Voices, I talked about the historic Gaza Tribunal held in Sarajevo, May 26 through the 29th, 2025. That was a gathering of international experts and human rights defenders united to expose and address the crimes committed by Israel in Gaza. I aired the opening remarks delivered by Professor Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur and Professor Emeritus of International Law at Princeton. On May 29, 2025, the Gaza Tribunal Public Assembly concluded in Sarajevo with the reading of its final declaration, known as the Sarajevo Declaration of the Gaza Tribunal. This historic document brings together months of testimonies, legal analysis, and moral witness to affirm what the world must no longer deny: a genocide is taking place in Gaza. The declaration calls upon global civil society, states, and institutions to uphold their obligations under international law, reject complicity, and mobilize for justice. Let's listen to the official Sarajevo Declaration of the Gaza Tribunal, read by Penny Green, Professor of Law and Globalization at Queen Mary, University of London, and a director of the International State Crime Initiative, who is a steering committee member for the Gaza Tribunal.
In the Declaration of Sarajevo, the Gaza Tribunal declares our collective moral outrage at the continuing genocide in Palestine, our solidarity with the people of Palestine, our commitment to working with partners across global civil society to end the genocide and to ensure accountability for perpetrators and enablers, redress for victims and survivors, the building of a more just international order, and a free Palestine. In the declaration, we call out and condemn the myriad crimes of the Israeli regime. We demand an immediate end to those crimes, including the occupation, the siege, the apartheid, and the genocide, and freedom for Palestinian prisoners. We defend UNRWA and other humanitarian actors on the ground and demand accountability for the attacks on them. We call on all governments and on regional and international organizations to act, and we denounce those who have been complicit, from states to media corporations and others. In the declaration, we denounce the wave of persecution and crackdowns on human rights defenders, peace activists, students, academics, workers, professionals. And we honor those who stand up, who despite this persecution have had the courage and moral convictions to stand up and speak out. And we reject the unjust tactic of smearing as anti-Semites or supporters of terrorism all those who dare to speak up against the Israeli regime. We express our conviction that the struggles against all forms of racism, bigotry, and discrimination necessarily includes the equal rejection of all forms of Islamophobia, anti-Arab and anti-Palestinian racism, anti-Semitism, Zionism, apartheid, and settler colonialism, and we commit to fighting all such scourges. We also reject the destructive ideology of Zionism as the official state ideology of the Israeli regime, of the forces that colonized Palestine and established the Israeli state on its ruins, and of pro-Israel organizations and their proxies today. Instead, the declaration insists, in the words of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights, and that there are no exceptions to this rule. The tribunal calls in the declaration for decolonization across the land and an end to the ethno-supremacist order and the replacement of Zionism with a dispensation founded on equal human rights for Christians, Muslims, Jews, and others. Further in the declaration, we honor the courageous resistance and resilience of the Palestinian people and the movement of millions standing in solidarity with them. We reaffirm the right of the Palestinian people to resist in accordance with international law. We recall that the Palestinian right to self-determination is jus cogens and erga omnes and is non-negotiable and axiomatic. We respect Palestinian aspirations and recognize full Palestinian agency and leadership over all the decisions affecting their lives. In the text, we also express our grave concern at the state
and direction of international relations, international politics, and international institutions. Their failings and the attacks on those international institutions that have challenged genocide and apartheid in Australia, in Palestine. We demand immediate action to isolate, contain, and hold accountable the Israeli regime through universal boycott, divestment, sanctions, a military embargo, suspension from international organizations, and the prosecution of its perpetrators, individual criminal accountability for all those implicated in war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, gross violations of human rights, or complicity. We applaud the International Court of Justice for its ongoing historic genocide case against the Israeli regime and for its landmark advisory opinions, and South Africa for bringing the genocide case to the ICJ. And we call for expediting the case of the ICC against Israeli perpetrators, for state parties to meet their obligations to arrest them, and for the US to cease its persecution of the court. And we call for full implementation of the pronouncements of the two courts in The Hague and the historic UNGA resolution of September 2024. We also express our admiration for the independent special procedures of the UN Human Rights Council, for their expert contributions, and for their strong and principled voices in holding the Israeli regime to account and defending the human rights of the Palestinian people, as well as for UN agencies that have acted to defend the rights of the Palestinian people, foremost among them UNRWA. Finally, in the Declaration of Sarajevo, we warn that the world is approaching a dangerous precipice, the front edge of which is in Palestine, and that both key international organizations and most countries of the world have failed in defending the human rights of the Palestinian people and in responding to the Israeli regime's genocide in Palestine. And we conclude the declaration by declaring, and I quote, "The challenge of justice now falls to the people of conscience everywhere, to civil society and to social movements, to all of us. As such, our work in the coming months will be dedicated to meeting this challenge. Palestinian lives are at stake. The international moral and legal order is at stake. We must not fail. We will not relent." And there ends the declaration. Thank you.
That was Professor Penny Green reading the official Sarajevo Declaration of the Gaza Tribunal. Dr. Nemer Soltani, a Palestinian legal scholar and reader in public law at SOAS University of London, delivered these remarks at the Gaza Tribunal during the Nakba and Colonial Genocide Panel held on May 26, 2025.
Let me introduce now, without further ado, Professor Nemer Soltani, who's Reader of Public Law at the School of Law at the University of London School of Oriental and African Studies. He holds a Master's of Law degree from both Tel Aviv University and the University of Virginia, and a Doctorate in Law from Harvard Law School. Before becoming an academic, he practiced human rights law in Israel-Palestine and worked with the Arab Center for Applied Social Research in Haifa. Professor Soltani is the editor-in-chief of the Palestine Yearbook of International Law, a very important publication for all of us interested in Palestine, and the author of Law and Revolution, Legitimacy and Constitutionalism After the Arab Spring. Please welcome Nemer Soltani.
Thank you very much. Palestine is a clear case in which the naming of the colonial condition has been delayed or avoided for so long, for too long. This lack of naming exposes an uneven application of principles and human rights. This lack of naming prolongs injustice and delays the application of human rights standards. We are here today to name the genocide. There's an increasing number of experts, human rights organizations, UN committees, commissions of inquiries, and UN officials who are increasingly willing to say that Israel is committing and has been committing another Nakba, another genocide. For example, on the 13th of May, Tom Fletcher, the UN's Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator, asked the UN Security Council, for those killed and those whose voices are silenced, what more evidence do you need now? Will you act decisively to prevent genocide and to ensure respect for international humanitarian law? End of quote. But today, we need to ask another question. The fact that this is not the first genocide that Zionism has inflicted on the Palestinians, and the fact that we commemorated the Nakba anniversary twice during this genocide, compels us to ask, what evidence is more needed for everyone to realize the nature of Israel and the nature of Zionism? Naming requires the recognition of historical context. In his 1963 letter from the Birmingham jail, Martin Luther King rejected what he called a superficial kind of social analysis that deals merely with effects and does not grapple with underlying causes. Yet, in the context of Palestine, especially after October 2023, we have seen a fierce attack on any attempt at contextualizing Palestinian and Israeli actions. There was a massive campaign, an aggressive discourse, that sought to portray the 7th of October as a freestanding event devoid of history. Despite this campaign, which sought to justify Israel's genocide under the banner of self-defense, the genocidal assault on the Palestinian people since October 2023 requires a consideration of the context in which it unfolded. This context includes the nature of Zionism as a settler colonial movement, the unlawful and prolonged occupation since 1967, the apartheid system imposed on all Palestinians, and the 17 years of unlawful siege imposed on Gaza prior to October. These conditions that Israel imposed on the Palestinian people make the Palestinians in Gaza in particular vulnerable to annihilation. And they also indicate an ideology of Jewish supremacy that is infused with a clear, long-standing and demonstrable intent to dehumanize, to discriminate against, to dominate, to subordinate, to dispossess and expel the Palestinians from their homeland. In July 2024, the International Court of Justice laid bare much of this pre-October 2023 reality in a detailed advisory opinion that emphasized that Gaza and the West Bank are a single territorial unit in which the Palestinian people are deprived of the right to self-determination and are subjected to an ongoing unlawful use of force and a set of discriminatory policies that amount to racial segregation or apartheid and a coercive environment to force them to leave their homeland. But already in its December 2023 application to the ICJ, South Africa highlighted that this genocide is part of a continuum, the 75-year-long apartheid, the 56-year-long belligerent occupation, and the 16-year-long blockade of Gaza that preceded the application. The consensus that Israel is committing a genocide in Gaza and that Zionism is indefensible is increasing because the evidence is overwhelming. The world has witnessed innumerable crimes committed against so many for so long in plain sight. But we need to be careful of the recent revisionism that seeks to justify the prolonged silence of so many in the face of the most barbaric crime in our lifetime, definitely in this century. According to this line, Israel's war evolved into a genocide after Israel violated the ceasefire and declared a siege on Gaza in March 2025, and then launched another round of brutal military assault that seeks to drive Palestinians out of Gaza, called Gideon's Chariots. These revisionists are pretending that there is something new in Smotrich's recent statement, that Smotrich and Ben-Gvir were not members of the security cabinet, which is constitutionally responsible for the war policy since October, and that Netanyahu's political survival did not depend on them on October 2023 as much as now. They are pretending that the problem is reducible to Netanyahu, when we have seen an endless supply of genocidal statements and public letters by senior commanders of the army. But Israel's genocidal intent and genocidal conduct were clear from the start to all those who have been willing and able to see the facts and to listen to what Israeli politicians and soldiers have repeatedly said. It was clear from the intensity and speed of the aerial bombardment. Within less than a week of the start of its attack on Gaza in October, Israel had dropped on the small and densely populated strip more explosive than the U.S. dropped on Afghanistan in a year. Within 3 weeks after the start of the attack, Israel dropped on the equivalent of two nuclear bombs. It was also clear from the casualties figures, including the proportion of women and children killed and the rate of killing. By mid-2024, the number of those killed in Gaza already exceeded the number of the Rohingya killed in Myanmar. And it exceeded the monthly mortality rate that we witnessed in Bosnia in the early 1990s. It was clear also from the comprehensive scope of the destruction that includes non-military targets and makes the Gaza Strip uninhabitable because it deprives the population from objects that are indispensable for their survival as a group. It was also clear from the scale and the pace of the forcible expulsions in October 2023 and the repeated displacements to an area that the ICJ declared in May 2024 as unfit for human survival, where the civilians were repeatedly bombed. It was also clear from the prolonged imposition of a total siege after October 2023 and the scale and the speed of the policy of starvation, which experts repeatedly labeled as unprecedented. It was also clear from the attack on what was called then the last refuge of Rafah, despite the ICJ's third round of provisional measures back in May 2024. It was also clear from a military operation that effectively implemented the so-called General's Plan in North Gaza from October to December 2024, and which was dubbed at the time as ethnic cleansing and a genocide within a genocide. The totality of these actions indicates the commission of genocidal acts and the existence of a genocidal intent that is inferred from these actions and this context. And therefore, it precludes security and military justifications. The recent campaign of starvation, mass displacement, and mass slaughter called Gideon's Chariots is merely the culmination of this genocidal war on the Palestinians, perhaps the final stage of it. While the International Court's jurisprudence has imposed a high threshold for the determination of genocidal intent, the imposition of such a threshold is problematic as it would undermine the purpose and the utility of the Genocide Convention. The problematic nature of this jurisprudence is clear considering the sustained criticism of the rulings of the ICJ concerning the genocide in Bosnia, including by the six Western states, Germany and the UK included, in their submission to the ICJ in the Gambia versus Myanmar case. The increasing consensus that Israel is committing a genocide shows that even by the yardstick of the high legal threshold in the ICJ, Israel's conduct in Gaza have clearly and demonstrably passed this threshold. South Africa has provided a comprehensive documentation of Israeli genocidal statements and incitement to genocide in its February 2025 submission to the UN Security Council. It also detailed the patterns of conduct that illustrate that Israel acts with genocidal intent. These patterns of conduct, some of which will be discussed later today, include the pattern of Israel targeting the vulnerable, including children, women, the wounded, the disabled, and those who have repeatedly been displaced and sought shelter. The pattern of Israel denying humanitarian aid to Palestinians in Gaza and the associated policy of starvation. The pattern of Israel creating unbearable living conditions for the Palestinians in Gaza. The pattern of Israel targeting those trying to help and protect Palestinians, including medical and humanitarian personnel. The pattern of Israel's forcible transfer and displacement of Palestinians in and out of Gaza. The pattern of complete disregard for the laws of war. The pattern of the failure to distinguish between civilians and combatants. And the pattern of destroying Palestinian life in Gaza. These patterns of conduct, which Israel maintained for a lengthy period in contravention of three sets of ICJ provisional measures to prevent genocide, and despite repeated warnings from international humanitarian organizations, and with full knowledge of the impact of its policies on the vulnerable Palestinian population in Gaza, provide sufficient evidence of Israel's intent to to destroy Palestinians in Gaza as such. We need not, of course, wait for formal pronouncements by courts to call a spade, to take a clear moral and political stance in opposition to mass slaughter and mass destruction, because our moral and political judgment is not reducible to formal legal rulings. There is an urgent task now to educate against genocide denial, to act to end the genocide, and to hold Israel and its leaders and soldiers accountable for the genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. But it is equally urgent to end the brutal occupation and dismantle the apartheid system that made the genocide possible. And it is equally important to defeat the legal sophistry and the ideological structures that dehumanized the Palestinians and justified the Nakba in 1948 and then the genocide in Gaza now and made them palatable. Thank you.
That was Dr. Nimer Soltani, a Palestinian legal scholar and reader in public law at SOAS University of London, speaking at the Gaza Tribunal during the Nakba and Colonial Genocide panel. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on other radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Did you know that this program, Arab Voices, has been on the air since April 2002? That's over 22 years of weekly Arab Voices programming, over 1,000 programs covering different topics with more than 1,000 expert guests appearing on this show from around the globe. All of that has been possible because of your support to KPFT, Houston's community station, our community radio station. And it is time for the fund drive. Please call right now to support KPFT at 713-526-5738 and make a tax-deductible contribution or make it online at kpft.org. Every dollar counts. Think of the value you get out of KPFT and really for everyone who listens. We know that not everyone can contribute, but if you can and appreciate what KPFT brings you every day, please consider a pledge because KPFT relies on you, the listeners, for support. The phones are open. There is room for your call. Help keep up the momentum. Call 713-526-5738 or donate online at kpft.org. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.